This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Russia launches dozens of missiles at targets across Ukraine, including the capital Kyiv, as Ukrainian forces intensify shelling of eastern regions. The Belgian capital witnesses a protest organized by several trade unions over pay and working conditions. And Germany's finance ministry says the country's public deficit will grow to 3.2% of GDP next year. Hello, everyone, and a very warm welcome to World News. Our top story, Ukraine says it shot down a majority of missiles fired by Russia in the latest flurry of such attacks. Chief Commander of Ukraine's Armed Forces says 60 of 76 Russian missiles were intercepted. In southern Ukraine, two people lost their lives after a Russian rocket hit a residential building in Kiriv-Rih city. Meanwhile, in Russian-controlled eastern Luhansk region, Ukrainian shelling of a village has killed at least 11 people and wounded over 20 others. That's according to pro-Russia forces, who called the attack barbaric. Moscow and Kyiv have stepped up air attacks against one another's positions in recent weeks. Ukraine says the Russian attacks have heavily damaged its energy infrastructure, causing widespread water and power cuts. The U.S. is finalizing plans to send Patriot missile systems to Ukraine. Kyiv has long been asking its Western allies to provide it with the systems ever since the war with Russia broke out in late February. Now, Russia has already warned the U.S. and its NATO allies against supplying the Patriot systems to Ukraine.
The United States is finalizing plans to send Patriot missile systems to Ukraine. The plan needs the final approval of U.S. Defense Chief Lloyd Austin and the U.S. President Joe Biden. It is not known how many of the batteries will be sent to Ukraine, but reports say supplies to Ukraine will be limited. But according to available data, a typical Patriot battery includes a radar set that detects and tracks targets, computers, and a power-generating equipment. It also includes an engagement control station and up to 8 launchers, each holding 4 radio-fire missiles. The systems are likely to be sent to the U.S. Army base in Grafenwöhr, Germany, where Ukrainian soldiers are likely to be trained and use the equipment. Ukraine has long been requesting the U.S. to send advanced long-range air defense system.
The message is simple. Give Patriots as soon as you can. Because this is the system that Ukraine needs to protect its civilian population and critical infrastructure. This is not an offensive weapon.
Russia has already warned that Patriot missile systems in Ukraine, if are deployed in the conflict, will be targeted. The former Russian President Dmitry Medvedev, who is now Deputy Chair of the National Security Council, had earlier warned that such weapons and their crews would be legitimate targets if a NATO member were to deliver them.
Now, the U.S. has recently boosted its air defense support to Ukraine, citing a surge in Russian missile attacks. Washington has so far provided Ukraine with over $19 billion in military assistance since the beginning of the conflict. Patriot is one of the most advanced air defense systems against aircraft and missiles, but its effectiveness has come under increasing question.
The U.S. and its Western partners have already resupplied Ukraine's air defense missiles and shoulder-fired Stinger missiles and other larger air defense systems. Patriot missile system is one of the most advanced U.S. systems against aircraft and missiles. Ukrainian officials say the delivery of Patriot missiles would be a game changer, but the efficiency of those weapons for Ukraine in the war against Russia is not clear. Each missile battery would require dozens of well-trained air defenders to operate. Even with an accelerated training program, could be sometime in early 2023 before a system is operational in Ukraine. Experts believe the Patriot has a more powerful radar that is better at discriminating targets, but it has its own limitations. Its efficiency would depend on how the weapon was delivered. The success rate of the Patriot has been repeatedly questioned. In 2018, Saudi Arabia's success in using Patriots against missiles fired in the Yemen war were questioned when evidence of systems failing emerged. The Patriot does not reportedly perform so well against small drones. It is not known whether the system's radar could pick up the small, low-flying drones or whether there were other issues. The U.S. has now committed more than $19.3 billion in weapons and other equipment to Ukraine since the war began in February of this year.
As we work with industry to accelerate production on both replenishment systems and direct procurements under the United Ukraine Security Assistance Initiative, or USAI, we're using a number of tools to get the funding moving and the contracting happen quickly. These include using contracting mechanisms called things like undefinitized contracting actions, sometimes called UCAs. What that allows you to do deliberately is to get industry working on an initial contract before we definitize it. And you can put a UCA together within a week, and we're doing that. We also are making use of indefinite delivery indefinite quantity contracts, or IDIQ. If you have IDIQs, and we have many of them, what you can do is just add task orders to them very quickly to get equipment on contract.
It is widely believed that those U.S.-made weapons are fanning the flames of war in Europe. But there are concerns that those weapons are falling into the wrong hands.
We're seeing this incredible, historic flow of weapons coming into Ukraine. Do we have any sense as to where they're going?
We don't know. There is really no information as to where they're going at all.
You know, all this stuff goes to the border, and then kind of like something happens, it kind of like 30% maybe we just find a destination.
Washington is reportedly looking into technological solutions to the problem of weapons diversion. Western weapons earmarked for Ukraine had reportedly surfaced in the hands of militant groups in the African Sahel.
Thousands of protests on the streets of Brussels demanding more support to deal with the growing cost of living crisis. Many of those who took part questioned how the EU can send billions of euros to Ukraine while neglecting the basic needs of citizens across the 27-country bloc. Jerome Hughes reports from the Belgian capital.
Protests through Brussels on Friday was organized by Belgium's three largest unions. They claim the country's federal government and EU authorities are failing to adequately help citizens during the current escalating cost of living crisis. Many also question how the EU is able to set aside at least 20 billion euro for Ukraine in 2023.
We are all against this war because it's about imperialism, it's about money. There's more behind. It's not only about Ukraine and about Russia.
Ukraine is a key point, but our people here as well. And the money is there. People have to be taxed properly, especially the 1%.
It's important to help the Ukrainians, but what about the people here in Europe and in Belgium?
The EU's energy sanctions against Russia over the war in Ukraine have backfired. Oil, gas, diesel, petrol and electricity prices are through the roof. Inflation across the eurozone is running at 10%. However, wages are not going up.
Many people can't buy the good food. Many people can't pay for our apartment.
Landlords are taking advantage from the inflation to raise the rents.
Landlords will now have another excuse. The European Central Bank increased interest rates by a half of 1% on Thursday.
And based on the substantial upward revision to the inflation outlook, we expect to raise them further.
The national strike on Friday resulted in flight cancellations, according to Brussels Airport. There were also major disruptions to tram, bus and metro services. Union members, not just here in Belgium, but across the EU, are warning of protests throughout 2023, which will impact public services, unless their cost of living concerns are addressed. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Now, Germany says its public deficit will grow to 3.25% next year as the energy crunch pushes the government to dip further down into its pockets. Finance Minister Christian Lindner warned that if government spending goes up, that figure could even reach 4.5%. Now, the government has unveiled a 200 billion euro plan to dampen the effects of soaring energy prices for the public. Part of the plan is to put a cap on gas prices for households and businesses. However, German economy is still expected to contract by 0.4% in 2023. The country expects its net borrowing to climb above 45 billion euros, nearly triple the initial estimates. And now joining us, Alberta Partners, Kirsha Campbell, accountant from the Cash Lab. Now, so how did one of the leading economies in the world, and especially in Europe, fall in such tough times? We know it's not just basically exclusive to the German economy. Europe is in dire straits. The 27-nation European Union, along with the UK, they're falling on really tough times. How did they get here, and how do they have to do to what do they have to do to manage it, man?
Okay, well, thank you so much for having me. So when we think about the dynamics of what impacts an economy, what impacts a country, we have to first look at the supply and demand of goods and services. We also have to look at, for example, that when you have a deficit occurring in a country, that there is, you know, you're spending more than what you're bringing in. And we can relate to that on the personal level as well. How did this happen? This happened because I think one of the main reasons is that there was not enough foresight managing what was happening and also not looking in the longer term. So, for example, when you think of certain dynamics or decisions or practices that were taking place in Germany, we realized that there could have been other decisions to mitigate this impact at this time. So, for example, when we think of Germany, it's a primarily industrial country. So you have the chemical sector, they're relying on natural gas. And we look further, we see that Germany was relying on Russia for most of that natural gas, most of that energy. So that, again, is a red flag. If, as a country, you are relying on a source for, let's say, 70 or 80% of a certain supply, that is a huge red flag. Because if negotiations go sour, if things go downwards, then you're in a problem. And this is one of the foundations that was shaky, and that has led to Germany being in this situation. Another thing which I will comment on is the impact and the role of the central bank. So think of like a parent and a child, right? You're, as a parent, you're responsible for your children. The central bank is responsible for certain policies in the country, interest rates, they manage inflation. So as the central bank, they are looking at various statistics, trends, making forecasts. So there are indicators that things are going downwards. We need to take action. We need to start having certain policies, certain remedies implemented quickly to mitigate, to lessen the impact overall of what is happening in the country and what it, where it's headed, right? So that is another thing I see, the role of the central bank and the choices, the decisions made, the policies that were adopted did impact, you know, the route to this situation for Germany. So definitely that is really, those are some of the things that led to this happening to Germany, which is pretty sad. Going forward, what can happen? So supply and demand, when we think about it, we are, Germany is now spending a whole lot more, having to also get monies injected by the government over and over to really mitigate and lessen what's happening. How can this be reversed in the future or start that journey to recovery? They're going to have, Germany will now have to be looking at how is it that we can increase supply? How is it that we can, for example, find another source for our natural gas to have our industrial sector rising again? So many persons are depending on that sector for a living, jobs, businesses, and it was a major impact on Germany when the sector went down. So there has to be some stimulus, some changes, some, you know, movement in policy to find ways in which, how can we revive this industrial sector? What is it that we can do? Alternative sources of energy, perhaps? We can also think about other sources, different suppliers outside of relying on Russia at this time. So those are some of the things. Okay, go ahead.
No, I'm sorry, ma'am, but it seems like, Ms. Campbell, that all the sources other than Russia are tremendously more expensive to get energy to the German people. And in your thoughts on this $200 billion cash aid for businesses and households, a lot of people feel like the numbers for 2023 would be a lot worse had the German government not rescued with this €200 billion stimulus package to keep prices capped. But guess what? That means it's subsidizing energy, and that's going to really cripple the German government itself. So my question to you, if this war on Ukraine and sanctions on Russia become prolonged, how's the German government going to deal with it? I mean, how much, many more of these €200 billion injections can they basically give the people without that affecting in the long term their inflation rate?
And again, yes. So what I'm saying is that in terms of, yes, the government has put these monies in and indefinitely can be sustained. So from the macro level, the major, the wide level, the government now will have to think about what is it that we can do to stimulate supply, stimulate the economy, right? So yes, Russia is usually the cheaper source of gas. However, in the interim, what other negotiations can be done with other sources of energy? We have to think outside the box. This is a crisis. So we have to think what else, what other negotiations can be done, you know, even if it's in terms of a shorter reduced cost, in terms of loan or debt, you know, what else can we do to get energy in to help to stimulate our economy, stimulate production? So that is something the government will have to now be exploring other sources to see what is it that we can do to get energy in, to get that sector back on track again. Another thing the government will be able to do is to, again, reach out to other countries. You know, it's a crisis. And what is it that you can do to help us in terms of, you know, other macro loans, other debt that can be, you know, implemented at a lower cost to help to stimulate the packages, the economy, and the choices and the policies that will help to turn this economy around.
All right, ma'am. Thank you for your input. Pleasure to have you on. Kiersha Campbell there joining us from the Cash Lab out of Alberta. Thank you. Stay safe. You bet. Bye-bye. Peru's Congress has rejected a bill to hold early elections, which is aimed at ending deadly protests over the ouster of President Pedro Castillo. Proposal was to move elections from 2026 over to December of next year, and it fell short of the 87 required votes. Castillo's successor, Dina Boluarte, had called for the snap vote to ease an ongoing unrest, which has so far left 18 people dead. The Supreme Court has extended the pretrial detention of Castillo for another 18 months. Leftist ex-president was impeached and arrested after he announced plans to dissolve Congress and rule by decree. The Peruvian Defense Ministry declared a 30-day state of emergency after all-out protests and roadblocks following Castillo's arrest last week. Thanks for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en. We'll be right back.
in the limelight.
This year marks the 74th anniversary of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Although the modern concept of rights and human rights has been raised throughout the discourse of the West since the 17th century, the historical evidence shows that while the hypocritical West has been engaged in murder, looting, mass murder, torture, pressure, enslavement, slavery over the past three centuries, its intellectuals and thinkers have been promulgating human rights law for the world. And today, it is the mask of human rights that gives a human gesture to their liberal democracy. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. Tehran Times had an eye on this issue, writing, "Western countries, and most notably America, are using the power of media to cover their true face with the mask of human rights and deceive the public opinion in the world. They talk about the rights of the nations, while the nations, more than ever before, feel the fire of their seditions. They pretend defense for the rights of minorities, women and children, and asylum seekers, but have been constantly and regularly committing crimes against the majorities around the world. They claim that we are committed to human rights, but in practice, they act differently. They have now turned human rights into a tool to get involved in the affairs of other countries and blackmail them. When one looks at their policy toward Palestine, particularly Gaza, it becomes quite clear how they behave dishonestly. Gaza is the most oppressed place on the earth where people are denied basic rights. It has got the title of the largest open-air prison, and once in a while, the Zionist regime attacks them to destroy the remaining vital infrastructure. They are tortured just because America and some Western powers are backing the racist regime of Israel. Or consider the JCPOA agreement between Iran and 5+1 nations. The United States openly violated UN Security Council Resolution 2231 that confirmed the deal, and the European parties to the agreement refused to honor their obligations. Now, like the pirates of the Caribbean, they have turned it into a tool to blackmail Iran. This is their nature. They're just caring for their own interests at the cost of the rights of others." The practical record of America, England, and France over the past three centuries is indicative of the fact that Western countries have a hypocritical approach toward human rights. We try to cast more light on the crimes of Western regimes by mentioning some concrete examples. America. American help to the Saudis' genocidal acts against the Yemenis, which constitute examples of war crimes and crimes against humanity over the past 8 years, are before our eyes. These crimes are completely contrary to the principles of human rights and the international humanitarian rights law stated in the United Nations Charter. Consider the Guantanamo prison. Why did the Americans take place and keep them there in most difficult conditions for several years without trial? Or the issue of the Abu Ghraib prison in Iraq and the tortures that took place there, helping to create ISIS or Daesh, which was explicitly acknowledged by President Trump in his election campaigns. In various cases, Americans helped ISIS to steal the Iraqi and Syrian oils and occasionally help the ringleaders to escape from possible capture. Inside America, we are also witnessing how the issue of human rights is clearly violated by the ruling U.S. establishment. The freedom to sell and carry weapons in the U.S. is the reason why so many killings take place in this country. You see that once in a while, a nervous or crazy person runs amok in school, university, or market, and fires at people and make many families mournful. There is a big question that why, despite all these tragic deaths, the sale of weapons, it is not stopped. It's clear that American governments are under the influence of these companies that make huge benefits from arms sales. The criminal behavior of the American government and the American police towards the black people. There are numerous instances in which the blacks are subjected to different kinds of injustice or even killed. In such cases, the judicial system holds a sham trial that in most cases lead to the release of the convict. The history of America is replete with flagrant violation of the rights of the people of color, especially the blacks. And about the France. In recent history, France has been characterized as a champion of human rights in artistic and intellectual circles. However, the crimes that France committed during colonialism, especially in Africa, is not highlighted. Remember what the French did in Algeria. They also committed crimes in Morocco and Tunisia. France was once hosting one of the most violent terrorist grouplets in the world. It was the home to leaders of the MKO terrorist grouplet, whose members committed numerous acts of terror in Iran in the early years of 1979 Islamic Revolution. In 1981, through bomb blast, they killed the president, prime minister, and head of the Iranian judiciary, along with 70 other political and legislative figures. And according to the available statistics, they martyred 12,000 ordinary people. However, they took shelter in France, which portrays itself as a champion of human rights and freedom. Or right now, consider the Yellow Vest protesters who have been holding rallies in Paris. They have been suppressed and a number of them have been blinded. This is the way they treat their own people. However, they criticize other countries to uphold human rights. In England, this country filled its treasury by colonizing and looting eastern countries, mainly the Indian subcontinent. And it created poverty and hunger for the countries under its rule. The British had a ruthless economic agenda when it came to operating in India, and that did not include empathy for native citizens. Under the British Raj, India suffered countless famines, but the worst hit was Bengal. The first of these was in 1770, followed by severe ones in 1783. 1866, 1873, 1892, 1897, and lastly, 1943-44. Also on April 13, 1919, hundreds of unarmed men, women, and children were gunned down by British troops at Jallianwala Bagh, a walled garden in Amritsar, falling unrest in northern Indian city. The British government, which ruled India at the time, put the death toll at 379, while Indian freedom fighters said nearly 1,000 people were killed. And therefore, the main problem regarding human rights law is that the drafters themselves are disproportionately and disappointingly are the main violators, and they have created a deep gap between what is lectured and what happens in practice. This hypocrisy of the Westerners is now evident with the awareness of the nations more than ever before. In practice, European countries and the U.S. literally committed all kinds of crimes all over the world. Well, these are the masterpieces of Western civilization and Western liberal democracy. It is true that the discourse and theoretical apparatus to realize this role outside the Western narrative of law has not yet evolved, but there are many flaws. This entails the necessity to investigate and create discourse around alternatives.
Back to reality.
It's the show where we discuss the most topical of topics, the most controversial of controversies, and the most important affairs of affairs.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, dear listeners, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to another episode of Back to Reality. This is Asma, your humble host. Once more, I have the privilege to be here with two very dear guests, Sister Zainab and Sister Bita. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam. Thank you, Sister Asma.
Thank you for being here.
Assalamu alaikum. Thank you. Today I'm really happy that I have the honor to be here with you two and our dear listeners.
Thank you. And we have the pleasure to have you both in here.
Thank you. So now,
as the ritual of this program, I would like you to give us a very brief introduction about yourself.
All right. I am Zainab Askari, and I am done with Master's in Linguistics from Kashmir University, and then I came to Iran, and I'm studying in the seminary school right now.
So wish you luck. And you, Sister Bita?
I'm Bita, a medical student who is really interested in that sort of discussions.
Depression is a mood disorder that causes a persistent feeling of sadness and loss of interest. Well, it sometimes could be called a syndrome, you know?
Yeah.
But nowadays, we see that it's been so pandemic. Well, now we've been through so much of reasons, personal reasons, social reasons that might affect us and put us in a situation where we feel depressed. The important question is that, why we go through depression? What are we chasing in this life that makes us feel depressed?
Sister Asma, we are chasing to be first in the race. In the race of life.
Perfection.
In the race of, I don't know.
All the time we feel there's a competition that we have to win.
For example, I am studying. I want to be topper in the class. In the meantime, I am depressed because if I don't reach that position, this will happen to me. All those negative consequences are in front of me. I am depressed in terms of my job. If I am having a good position, I still want to have more and more. You know, the thing is, you want to have more and more and more everywhere. And that's what is coming
so
in depression.
So this insatiable soul of ours is making terrible things happen to our life.
Sometimes you cannot feel the balance between your physical part and spiritual part. And I think this is one of the most important reasons of depression. You know, it means that sometimes you feel like your body, your, I don't know, physical feature and so on will limit you, will make you limited. And this feeling of being limited, a creature which has a big soul and want to be bigger and is searching for perfection because of lack of a spiritual size in her or his life, because ignoring God and so on, sure, he will get depressed.
But
I think
true,
having a special school to find your connection with God, find your connection with this spiritual part of the world will help you to overcome this kind of depression that you feel a lot in your life, I think. You know, for example, sometimes there are situations that you are in difficulty and all of your beliefs will be faded. What all of a sudden you think like, is there any God to help me? I'm so sorry to say that, but, you know, there is this thought sometimes.
The moment of weakness, you feel like you're empty.
Yeah, exactly. This feeling of depression, I think, is more touchable for everyone, even our listeners, I think. And
yeah, we all can relate to that.
Yeah, exactly. And this comes from exactly the lack of love of God, I think.
So, sister, what do you do in those situations?
I don't want to sound like cliche, because if, for example, I tell you I would pray, I would pray.
I know what you mean, yes.
But it may sound like cliche, so I'm just going to tell you that I think.
Yeah.
Thinking is the best way, method that I use to work on this depression. And I think when I try to search for my questions, mm-hmm. if it's like, okay, there is something that is not discovered in this world here, and I'm here to discover it, I'm here to go for it, you know?
Yeah.
I try to make some goals, maybe.
That is very true, you know, because those goals give meaning to our life.
Exactly.
There was a legend in mythology that we studied. It was the myth of Sisyphus. I don't know if you have heard about it or not, but they said there was a man who has been cursed by the gods to roll a stone up to a hill and then bring it back every morning. So every morning he takes it up to the pinnacle of the hill. And then bring it down till the night.
Without any meaning.
So he has to go through that circle on and on and on.
Over and over again.
Yes. And many people would think of life as something like this. When I think that my everyday are just the same as the previous day. Every new day I wake up, I say, oh my God. So this is going to be the repetition of the last day. So if I try to set goals for myself, if I try to change my plans for each day, if I try to learn a new thing every single day, then my life is not going to sound as miserable as the life of Sisyphus, I guess.
Sometimes overworking is the answer too.
Getting addicted to every job you do.
Exactly. When you work a lot and you go to your bed with the, I don't know, like a kind of murdered body, it's like, okay, you cannot think about anything, the meaning of life or anything, and you're that much tired that just you want to sleep for the next day to work.
And then eventually one day comes when you wake up and say, oh my God, what have I done to my life? So I guess getting too much addicted to job is not a good way of getting out of depression.
Yeah.
I know what you mean. Actually, you mean to get engaged, you know, in order not to think about the toxic things you have in your
life. I think she's trying to say that, you know, an empty mind is a place where Satan attacks more and takes you more towards the things that you should not go
to. They say an idle brain is the devil's workplace.
That's what I was trying to say. And since it's that place, he never wants you to be happy.
Yeah.
So he would take you towards things that would cause depression to you. So yeah, keeping yourself engaged would help, but not to the extent that you get so much
addiction.
Then we go through addiction. The same engagement makes you depressed again.
Exactly. Yeah, that's very true. So it's very important to have a special time for yourself. It's very important to have a plan for your future. There shouldn't be a single day for you without knowing what you are going to do the next day. You must have a plan. If you finish plan A, you have to start plan B. Then you know how the alphabet
goes. I think Imam Sadiq al-Islam says that if there's a believer who does not have a timetable, is not among us.
Yeah, and then Imam Ali alayhi salam also says the one whose every day is just the same is not of us. I guess it's something like this. It has a concept like this.
If your today is same like your yesterday, know that you're in loss.
That is very true.
Yeah. You have to expand your social communication with other people. You have to make friends and so on, and that will help.
I think that should be beyond social media as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That communication, if that is in personal, has much more impact than being in like on just social media platforms.
Face to face.
Yeah,
that's very true. But also I would say that media is another reason of depression, because there are plenty much of people who are just like beholders. They go there and they watch the life of other people and they think like, everything is really as peachy as they try to show it.
Compare.
But unfortunately, it is not. Many people wear masks when they are using medias. You know, they create different identities for themselves. The identity I have in, I don't know, this application is different from the identity I have from the other one. Then I start creating bubbles for myself that are really bubbles. You can prick them down and then they would break and then your identity is going to be lost. But then the other people who are watching your photos, who are watching your smiles and happy laughs, did not know that.
This is not the whole lie.
Yeah, it is not the whole truth.
And I remember one of my best friends who went to one of the so-called powerful countries of the world, the financial capital. And when I was calling her and I was like, you might be very, very happy now since you're in that country, you're studying there and everything, life must be, you know, smooth and all. She just mentioned one line, the elephant's teeth are different to show and different to eat.
Yeah.
One of the quotes in our language, and the meaning is same, like there are some countries that may show you that zeal and zest and passion and everything, but the reality is something else.
When you dig deep down, it's not going to be the same.
It's not going to be the same thing. And depression mostly comes out there, you know, when you think that other country people are more happier, we are the saddest people on the earth, or we are the saddest. No, that's not the case. You know, the same thing.
Comparison is another reason for depression.
Comparison
is one of the killing.
Reasons.
Yeah.
Especially when you compare yourself to the people you feel like they have a better life, who really don't have.
Exactly.
I just had a conversation with one of my friends living in one of another very good countries, earning very good. And I was like, now you might be very, very happy.
Now, are you satisfied?
No, the person said that I do earn a lot, but I have this country makes sure that I give it back.
Yeah.
Like in terms of gas charges, the
taxes everywhere, yeah.
Energy prices, everything. Like it makes sure that whatever I earn.
So I get from the whole story that you mentioned in here is that the quality of life matters, not the quantity of life. So the things that I'm going through, maybe...
Because why I mentioned just this example, there are so many other examples. Because we think someone having a very good education or someone having a very good amount of money are the most happiest people. They are not.
Yeah.
Go and talk
That's
to
the
them.
Biggest.
They're
lying. Let me tell you,
so many celebrities out there going for suicide. Why? They had everything. They had name. They had fame.
Right point to
but
mention.
Are depressed.
So I guess now the fruit of our discussion is going to sprout out, but let's go for a short break and I'll be back.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Back to Reality.
Welcome back, dear listeners. We are talking about depression. Well, depression might sound a little bit of sad and dark and very narrow, but it happens. That is very true.
This is the gist.
Yeah, this is the gist. You cannot buy happiness. You cannot think that by having too much of money, too much of facilities, I'm going to live happily ever after. This is the biggest lie ever. If you're telling it to yourself, then try to change your perspective, because then you're going to be disillusioned. And the truth is, the closer you get to Allah, the more trust you have on Him, you are going to develop such assurance in your heart that no matter whatever your facilities are, whatever house you're living in, whatever price your income is, then you're not going to go sad. And you would make sure that, okay, we have been talking about death. If you think too much about death, I guess it is going to help you not getting into the trap of depression, because then you would believe that everything in this world is temporary.
It's going to finish.
And this transitory nature of this world and whatever that exists in it would be a relief, you know? Nothing is going to last forever.
I'm
going to
tell you that we shouldn't search this happiness in the outside world.
Yeah.
This is the inner happiness that will make you happy.
Very true.
And that inner happiness you're going to get through reciting zikr, reciting, you know, du'as, the supplications that we learned from the school of thought of Ahlul Bayt alayhim salam.
Yeah, so the world has got too much of flashy things to attract our attention. There are too much of problems in our way. There are too much of uphills and downhills. But the whole fact and truth is that nothing is going to last forever. And one day we have to leave everything. So if you have a problem, don't take it so serious. If you have too much of goodness in your life, don't take it too serious, because they're not going to be there forever. So try to work on yourself. And as Sister Bita mentioned, the happiness is something that comes from the core of your heart. And there is no way to get it except from having a deep connection with Allah. Every bad thing that might come into your mind, there exists in this world. Yeah. But after all, we have a Lord, and Allah has promised us to be there. He's always close to us, and He will never let us down. Develop such an assurance in your heart. So thank you, dear listeners. This was all the time that we had for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. Until another session, I bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ya Allah, Ya Rabb al-Alamin, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim, يا ربي لدي أمة رازقة
يا الله
يا رب العالمين يا رحمن يا رحيم يا ربي لدي أمة رازقة لتصي دليلتك once again.
IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
A new report finds that the U.S. War Department uses security cooperation programs for secret wars. In this regard, we have provided the views and attitudes of world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. Responsible statecraft wrote, U.S. military forces have been engaged in unauthorized hostilities in many more countries than the Pentagon has disclosed to Congress, let alone the public, according to a major new report released recently by New York University School of Law's Brennan Center for Justice. Afghanistan, Iraq, maybe Libya. If you ask the average American where the United States has been at war in the past two decades, you would likely get this short list, according to the report, adding, secret war, how the U.S. uses partnerships and proxy forces to wage war under the radar. But this list is wrong, off by at least 17 countries in which the United States has engaged in armed conflict through ground forces, proxy forces, or airstrikes. The report's author, Catherine Yan Ebright, wrote in the introduction, This proliferation of secret war is a relatively recent phenomenon, and it is undemocratic and dangerous. The conduct of undisclosed hostilities in unreported counties contravenes our constitutional design. It invites military escalation that is unforeseeable to the public, to Congress, and even to the diplomats charged with managing U.S. foreign relations. The 39-page report focuses on so-called security cooperation programs authorized by Congress pursuant to the 2001 Authorization for Use of Military Force, or AUMF, against certain terrorist groups. One such program, known as Section 127E, authorized the Defense Department to provide support to foreign forces, irregular forces, groups, or individuals engaged in supporting or facilitating authorized ongoing military operations by United States Special Operations Forces to combat terrorism. According to the report, that support has been broadly, or more accurately, too broadly interpreted by the Pentagon. In practice, it has enabled the U.S. military to develop and control proxy forces that fight on behalf of, and sometimes alongside U.S. forces, and to use armed force to defend its local partners against adversaries in what the Pentagon calls collective self-defense, regardless of whether those adversaries pose any threat to U.S. territory or persons, and in some cases, whether or not the adversaries have been officially designated as legitimate targets under the 2001 AUMF. In Somalia in 2016, for example, U.S. forces invoked collective self-defense to launch a strike against a rival militia of the Puntland Security Force, an elite brigade that had originally been recruited, trained, and equipped by the CIA and subsequently taken over by the Pentagon in 2011. Moreover, the Pentagon deployed the PSF, which was largely independent of the Somali government, to fight Al-Shabaab and IS of Somalia, sometimes alongside U.S. forces for several years before the executive branch designated Al-Shabaab as legitimate targets. It has never so designated the ISS. Similarly, in Cameroon, U.S. forces accompanying a partner force on an advise and assist mission ended up shooting and killing an adversary. The Pentagon has used a Section 127 program there to pursue leaders of Boko Haram, a terrorist group that has never been publicly identified as an associated force of Al-Qaeda, and thus a lawful target under the 2001 AUMF, according to the report. Congress rarely hears of these incidents because, according to the report, the Department of War insists they are too minor or episodic to raise to the level of hostilities that would trigger reporting requirements under the 1973 War Powers Resolution. The report, which relies on published work by investigative reporters, interviews with knowledgeable officials and congressional staff, official documents and records, as well as the author's legal analysis, identifies 13 countries with Section 127E programs in addition to Somalia and Cameroon. They include Afghanistan, Egypt, Iraq, Kenya, Lebanon, Libya, Mali, Mauritania, Nigeria, Syria, Tunisia, and Yemen. But it is stressed that the list is almost certainly not exhaustive. 50 countries, from Mexico to Peru, in the west to Indonesia and the Philippines, where U.S. forces are known to have taken part in combat operation in the east, and covering 22 countries in North and Sub-Saharan Africa alone, not to mention Ukraine, had Section 333 programs in place as of mid-2018, according to the report. Perhaps even more dangerous than the Section 127E counterterrorism programs, according to the report, are security cooperation programs undertaken pursuant to Section 1202 of the National Defense Authorization Act of 2018, using language that mirrors Section 127E. That provision goes beyond the counterterrorism purposes of Section 1273E by authorizing support to partner forces engaged in supporting or facilitating irregular warfare operations by the United States Special Operations Forces. Irregular warfare is identified by DOD as competition, short of traditional armed conflict or all-out war. Pentagon officials have described Section 1202 as a highly useful tool for enabling irregular warfare operations to deter and defeat revisionist powers and rogue regimes. They have also insisted that irregular warfare is likely to be increasingly relied on as DOD begins to prioritize great power competition. Broadly speaking, the purpose of the Section 1202 authority is to take the Department's Section 127E approach of creating and controlling partner forces and wield it against countries like North Korea, according to the report. Section 1202, in short, raises the same potential as 127E for hostilities that Congress has not authorized, but with far graver consequences because the enemy could be a powerful nuclear-armed state. Given the increased risks, simply repealing or reforming outdated and overstretched AUMFs is insufficient. The report includes Congress should repeal or reform Department of Defense Security Cooperation authorities. Until it does so, the nation will continue to be at war, without in some cases the consent or even knowledge of its people, it added.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.